Hello there, welcome to Famous Last Nerds, your one-stop pod for all things pop culture. Thank you for joining us again, and big thank you to everyone that's listened to the Joker episode that we did last week before last, actually. It's been reasonably well received, so thank you for that, and thank you to everyone for the feedback we've had about the graphics and stuff that our friend Chris did. It's been nice to not be Let's Talk anymore and to be something a little bit more unique, so thank you for the warm reception. Yeah. How are you doing, mate? Are you good?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. It was good to have our first kind of podcast under that logo. I thought it was a good podcast. Joker's obviously performing exceptionally well.
The highest grossing R-rated movie of all time, surpassing both Deadpools.
Yeah, Deadpools and Logan, obviously, I think was R-rated. Must have been. And which did pretty well. And there's other things, obviously, horror films, you know, obviously, some of them do quite well in the franchises and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd say that's quite a remarkable achievement, you know, because it's still getting good and bad press. Do you know what I mean? It's still being talked about, even 3 weeks on or whatever it is. So it's one of those films that I think will continue to, you know, be talked about. And then potentially in the kind of award season next year, I hope there's some at least representation of the achievements, especially of like Phoenix's performance and whatnot. So
What have you been watching, listening, playing recently?
Various stuff. So I Watchmen, obviously.
Yes. Which started off at about a million miles an hour.
I think so. I've only watched the first episode. I've been quite busy, so I will catch episode two, but I'm going to go back and watch episode one again just to kind of get my head around it a little bit, because the tone was great but not kind of what I expected. Interestingly, I'm watching The Leftovers, which I really want you to watch, and I know I say this quite a lot, but I think you bloody love it. So The Leftovers is it's a Damon Lindelof show, and he is the showrunner, writer, whatever, for Watchmen. I think he was also quite heavily involved in Lost. He's done loads of good screenplays over the years, but he's quite an influential kind of guy. Leftovers ran from like 2014 to 2017. It's only three seasons.
Yeah.
I'm finally on the third season. And essentially it's about coping with loss, but it's got a bit of kind of magical, mystical stuff in there. It's really quite dark at times. It's essentially a big event happens and an X amount of the population of the world goes missing. So it feels a little bit kind of end game, but it was pre-end game, you know. And so it's really
cool. Got a good cast as well, hasn't it? Justin Theroux, Christopher Eccleston, Liv Tyler, Carrie Coon.
Carrie Coon is incredible.
I really like it. Regina King's in it as well. I love Regina King.
That's the Lindelof connection. That's why I think she got cast in Watchmen. She's amazing. She got her first Oscar last year. She's so, so good. But Justin Theroux, man, I didn't know that guy could act like he can. If you watch it, you'll just be blown away. He's just incredible.
Did she get the Oscar for?
If Beale Street Could Talk, I think, which I've not seen, but it got loads of praise.
Right.
But she's a great actress, always has been, you know. But
best supporting actress.
Female kind of front in Watchmen, do you know what I mean? It's quite a bold move for them to do that, and I think it's great. I think it's Watchmen's a really cool show. I am watching The Walking Dead still.
We're both suffering for it, aren't we?
I think suffering is right now, actually, because I wanted to get on board with it again, but it's a bit boring.
It's been up and down. I think it started okay. The stuff with the Whisperers is really interesting.
I think the second episode with the Whisperers, when it was a bit more of a backstory and about Alpha and Beta and stuff, was quite cool.
But the stuff around it, like you say, it's all gone quite quiet and a bit boring.
Last episode was crap.
It was really weird. It's almost more, at times it's more like a soap opera than an apocalyptic
people always
kind
said
of thing.
It was a soap opera, right? And I kind of understood that. But now it's kind of like endurance zombie killing, which is not fun. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing creepy about it, or nothing suspenseful, which we said we quite liked about some parts of the last season. I don't know. It's just this last episode really got me flat again on it.
Flat's probably the best word for it. I thought it started off well. it was okay. And then last week's was really, really good. Like you, I thought that the intro to Alpha and Beta and how they came up with the names, and you could see them sowing the seeds of the Whisperers was great. But this year, this week's was all...
Oh, it was awful.
Really boring, personal, political stuff. And it's a bit... It's like you've got the Whisperers in the background. How can you not be focusing all of the screen time on that?
They felt like they were getting it a little bit more right, and then this feels very much like Fear the Walking Dead or something, where it's just kind of pointless. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have any, you know, and it's honestly, it was an episode before the Tiger got killed. I don't know what, we're going back a couple of seasons.
That was a couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, but there was an episode before that that felt very similar to this, where I think I did knock it on its head, and then I gave it a while and went back and watched a few in a row. I think I might do that. Because I think if you watch a few in a row, at least you get a little bit more. You can get over the boring elements of it, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that. And then, yeah, not playing too much. Went back and played a bit more Red Dead Redemption again, which was cool because just kind of fancied exploring again. Listened to various bits and pieces, but nothing substantial. I might talk a little bit about El Camino, which is the Breaking Bad movie that dropped on Netflix, when we talk about this next question that someone asked us, because it's kind of relevant.
Yeah.
What have you been watching otherwise?
Same as you. Still with The Walking Dead, all my superhero shows.
There's loads now, man.
Watchmen.
Loads.
Watchmen's been really good. For anyone that's not watched it, the key thing to take away is it follows on from the comic, not from the film.
And it's nothing like the film. It's nothing like the film. And I think there was a couple of people that tweeted about this and said, yeah, get ready for Lindelof to break your little Snyder dreams a little bit, you know, because there's nothing wrong with the film. It's great. But it feels like, say, if they made a Logan TV show, like an old man Logan, and it was in a very different style, people would just be like up in arms. And I think there'll be an element of people like that. But I think, you know, the more the cleverer it is, I'm all for it. You might like there's a Paul Rudd thing on Netflix, like a kind of 8-part. Comedy thing where he's got a clone.
Chances are anything. Oh, I've seen that advertised. Yeah, that does actually look quite funny.
8 times 30 minutes or something. So I've watched.
If it wasn't Paul Rudd, I probably wouldn't be interested. But I would watch Paul Rudd taking a shit, to be honest. So
it's Aisling Bea as well, who's the kind of Irish comic.
Oh well, I like her because she's very dirty. Yeah, she's got a very dirty sense of humour.
She's great, and they work really well together in it actually. So it's a nice little show. And things like that I keep in touch with, you know, because the Netflix shows are good for, they drop something and you can kind of blitz through it, do you know what I mean? So I'm still doing that, but I'm not committed to any big 5-season, 6-season, do you know what I mean? But I just can't keep up with stuff like that now, I don't have the time. So yeah, it's I'm being very choosy about what TV I watch, but I did go and see Zombieland as well.
Yeah, I still need to find time to go.
I know. I think you'll love it, actually, because it's very much our sense of humour. Good. It's very much fan service for the first film, which is what we're here for, because we're very much fans of the original.
That's it.
It's really good, actually. It's not as good as the original. I didn't expect it to be, but it's got enough laughs, and it's got Rosario Dawson, so
winner.
So, yeah, and various, I mean, kids have been off, so... I did go back and watch the original 2 Ghostbusters films with the kids, which was just incredible, to be honest. So we've done that before, but Grace wasn't interested in this time around. She really was. And it's great to go back and watch 80s movies where they're literally just chain smoking and casually swearing, and the kids are just like, it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of funny because it just doesn't fit with their usual animated kind of, or whatever the hell they watch nowadays. But, you know, those kind of classic 80s family films are just brilliant. So, yes, I'm sure you'll have fun introducing your little one to those when she's older.
Oh, I'm sure I will. The major things I've been enjoying at the minute is the new series Batwoman, which has started off really well, and Titans Season 2. Season 1 was a bit...
That's already come round again, Jesus.
Yeah, Season 1 was a bit hit and miss, but Season 2's been brilliant. It's all been centred around Deathstroke. It was anyone who knows me knows he's one of my favourite comic book villains ever. And they've done it really, really well. So, well recommended for anyone that's...
I think I'll come back around to those kind of shows. I think I just haven't had the time. It's one of those things where I kind of need a week and I can just kind of maybe blitz some of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I'm kind of through some But at the minute, I'm not watching many films, but I'm watching the kind of cinematic TV, and that kind of stuff is, it's good popcorn entertainment, isn't it? It's just having the time. And like, you're very committed to keeping up to it, but if you don't, you can easily lose track of everything, because there's so many of them now. And then they announced the Superman or Lois Lane and Clark Kent show, didn't they? So they're doing everything now.
Everyone expected that based on how last year's crossover finished with Superman proposing to Lois and Lois announcing that she was pregnant. It was well telegraphed that they were going to be doing a series, but we can talk about that in the future. There'll be plenty of time to talk about that.
I will just quickly touch upon a couple of bits of news just while we're chatting, because Game of Thrones, Benioff and Weiss, or you know, the writers that were so much slandered, despite them creating one of the finest TV shows of all time in Game of Thrones. I know the last season isn't the best, and the reason they were so rushed is because they were trying to work on this Star Wars project, which kind of links into what we're going to talk about today. And their Netflix commitments, I don't know what contract they've got with Netflix, but they clearly have been signing up left, right and centre, now means they can't do the Star Wars gig. So I feel a bit cheated out of more Game of Thrones episodes.
I'm not that bothered about their Star Wars thing not coming out. That doesn't bother me at all. But I'm really disappointed, especially after they've already shot the pilot for this prequel that it was supposed to be. The First Men versus the Children of the Forest.
That's been scrapped as well. So the Jane Golding and Jonathan Ross's wife.
I'm really disappointed about that.
Who was the Naomi Watts?
Naomi Watts was the lead.
I mean, Jesus, how? And they've been shooting, like you said. It's been
the whole pilot was finished, and it was obviously being evaluated to see whether they were going to do a full series order, and they've decided to pass. So
I
Dan
really
and Dave have basically
that last
walked.
Season, yeah, that last season of Game of Thrones has really skewed things, hasn't it? A little bit. Do you know what I mean?
It looks like maybe that sort of weakened their position. Like, if that had been a universally acclaimed series, they probably would have been in a stronger position to walk in and go, "We'd like a series," and they go, "Right, you can have a series." But
you know,
they've gone over
it
with a fine tooth comb.
It's because they want subscribers for their HBO Max service, which is their own streaming device.
Because it's all about streaming.
Well, everything is now becoming a streaming race. I mean, Apple TV's just dropping on Friday, so probably day after this is released, maybe. And that's getting a load of acclaim because there's a big Jason Momoa show, and Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston are on this kind of drama.
Yeah, because they've plugged about $10 bajillion into trying to get Apple TV up and off the
ground. And actually,
some
of the projects sound quite interesting, which, you know, surprised me.
They do. It's just they're taking the Man City approach, aren't they? They're just going, right, we're really late to the game, so let's just piss a load of money into it and hope that it works.
There's a Hayley Seinfeld show.
I'm convinced.
Which sounds quite interesting. So they're getting really good people and working on really interesting.
I really do like Hayley Steinfeld. She's fantastic.
I can't wait for her to be. I don't know what she's going to do next. I'm still hoping. I mean, Bumblebee is it a Universal thing? Transformers own Universal. I think it is. So we're not got any kind of. I could see they could, you know, launch a TV show or something cool off the back of that, but there isn't as of yet a bloody Universal TV. Network thing, which
is Paramount.
Is it Paramount?
Paramount.
Yeah, I think Paramount and Universal are all interconnected nowadays.
Everyone's bloody connected.
I know, man. It's hard to keep.
And somewhere along the way, Disney owns everyone and everything. Statistically, one of the pair of us is actually owned by Disney. It can't be me because I swear too much.
No, I know you're.
I'm definitely Hulu.
They are introducing the R-rated Deadpool into the family, so you never know. Disney Plus is about to drop, and we're not getting The Mandalorian. I think it's the 12th of November.
This or next week, something like that, and I'm really steamed. It's not just that they haven't even announced when it launches, they haven't even announced if it launches.
Well, it's going to launch. I listened to a TV podcast that, you know, Empire is interlinked with, and I think it's going to be first quarter of next year, but probably like March or April. The problem they've got is they've got a huge deal with Sky, obviously, for a lot of their property, and that probably runs out at a certain point. But you would have thought they would have had a bit of foresight to maybe pull those contracts earlier.
Well, you'd think so. You know what I mean? You look at what Marvel have done with the Netflix contracts, with pulling Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and Daredevil, and then letting the other ones like Punisher and Jessica Jones drop off the edge of a cliff. Yeah. They've obviously seen this coming way down the road. And like you say, not cancelling things, not letting things get nasty, just let them run their course and then just don't renew them.
It's a bit different when it's property that Sky probably leased out, so they've had agreements.
Well, that's one of Sky's big things, isn't it? The way they leased out Game of Thrones. That was a massive draw and a massive sales pitch for them. Get Game of Thrones 24 hours after it's aired in America.
It's going to be really interesting what happens next, because I don't know what Sky are going to be left with. Do you know what I mean? Because a big part of their movie network and their channels are all Disney-related.
So. It's going to take a big chunk out of Sky Go, because that's one of their big things, is the box sets. And the various little playlists they have for kids and for Marvel.
I still think they're going to come to an agreement, but it's really short-sighted that they don't think everyone is just going to stream The Mandalorian illegally, let's be honest, in the rest of the world.
There's no way people are going to wait 3, 4, 5, 6 months for something as hot as a Star Wars thing.
No, absolutely no way. The trailer, the second or third trailer drops yesterday or this week.
It looks very good.
It looks that era of Star Wars, which we're going to go and talk about, which we both particularly love, and it just looks really interesting. And it looks so well.
It looks like a film. I would swear that was a film trailer.
Favreau's obviously the guy behind it. And I mean, what a guy to have as a showrunner. You can like all Lion King all you want, but it's made about $1.7 billion at the box office. So the guy clearly is safe hand.
That's the thing. I mean, I've still not seen it, but you can't rag on it and say it's shit, because if it's made that much money that quickly, it must objectively be very, very good, whether you like it or not.
I'm not a fan, but objectively, he set out to create what he created, and what he did was incredible in that regard, you know. So, yeah, fair play to the guy. As long as he's happy to keep doing that and then making Chef TV shows on the side, I'll be a happy man.
$1.652 billion. So I'm sure he won't be complaining.
And that's got to be like top 10.
That's probably pushing top 5.
It's insane, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely crazy. Especially when they've had like flops with like Dumbo and other properties this year, like Maleficent and all that. They're really struggling with those, Disney. But then you've got something like that that goes and creams $1.6 billion.
It's actually the seventh highest grossing film. It's just behind Jurassic World, Infinity War, Force Awakens, crazy. Titanic, Avatar, and of course, Endgame.
Yeah.
So to have it in there with that kind of company is staggering.
It is staggering. Yeah, it is staggering. I mean, you know,
it's ahead of Avengers, the first Avengers. Yeah. It's ahead of Furious 7, Age of Ultron, Black Panther. It's just
crazy. I know, but that's Disney for you.
That's Disney. And speaking of Disney.
Yeah, I know. Well, let's do the one question that we did ask for
Brilliant question, to be fair. So thanks to Kev G for sending that one
Kev G. It's Kev G. Great Twitter handle, I must admit, because it's as it says. If you could wipe your memory clean of one TV series you've watched, so you can watch it again for the first time, what series would it be? Hard one, actually, I'll be honest. And I have thought about this a few times.
I've been thinking about it on and off today. My gut says Game of Thrones.
I get that.
Because culturally, it was just such... I remember how exciting it was watching the first season. And like when you see Ned get killed. It was a genuine like, what? He was all over the posters. How can you kill him? I know he's Sean Bean and he always dies, but how can you kill him?
What I would say along with this is, I'd say the caveat is you've got to allow your memory to be wiped of any association with it, if that's allowed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't want all the shit that went down, you know, because there's so many spoilers anyway. If you went into Game of Thrones now without any of the hype and all the bullshit around it and bravado, then it would be a great series.
You'd have to have your mind wiped, and you'd have to live in a soundproof, completely off-grid room until you'd finished.
Just have a week of pure Game of Thrones.
Oh, what a week that'd be.
Yeah, I mean, it would be for the first time again. I think give it 10 years, I might watch it again, my little boy, you know, and just watch it all through, and it'll be
Oh, well, Lucy's not allowed to watch Game of Thrones until she's at least in her 40s.
I was thinking Jacob would be 18 then. He keeps asking me about Zombieland. I'm like, it's a comedy. He's like, well, tell me a joke from it. I'm like, I really can't tell
you a joke from it. I can, but your mum will kill me.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Can I really say what Woody Harrelson says in that film?
Nope.
Nope.
Woody Harrelson can't even say what Woody Harrelson said in that film.
What a legend. As I kind of alluded to, I would go for Breaking Bad, which I don't think you've even seen Breaking Bad.
No.
It's one of those that it's hard to commit to something that's 7 seasons long.
That's the thing.
You know, and it's like The Wire, which everyone always tells us to watch, and they'd love us to watch it. And I know that, and I'd love to watch The Wire, but I do not have enough time in my life to watch something that's 5 or 6 seasons long at the minute. I think I'll come back round to it eventually. And it's the same with Sopranos, which I dabbled with, but I'll be honest, that kind of genre isn't really my thing, you know.
Yeah, me either. So,
yeah, but Breaking Bad really kind of struck a chord with me. It was when Jacob was really little, I think baby age, at least under one, and then I watched a lot of, you know, stuff in the middle of the night, and I didn't get any sleep anyway, do you know what I mean? So I was kind of, yeah, I was catching up on when Netflix was first kind of came around, and I think I watched like 5 seasons in like no time at all, and then they started dropping the stuff that they'd commissioned for the last season or two and like dropping it weekly. And it was just incredible. I love Breaking Bad. I think it's the best. It's probably one of my favourite shows. And then El Camino is just the thing that covered Jesse Pinkman as a kind of epilogue, is the fair way to put it. And it was excellent and I really loved it. I haven't watched Better Call Saul. I might eventually, but I think it's hard because we talked about like Gotham and various things. El Camino worked just, but it is a little bit like Robin without Batman because it doesn't have, you know, Bryan Cranston's kind of synonymous figure that goes along with Breaking Bad, because it's just his development into Overlord. Do you know what I mean?
From yeah.
Gentle science teacher to meth dealer to, you know, oh, it's just crazy, man. It's a really good show. It only works mainly for those two. They're just so good, but it's really well produced. It's really good, and the film was great. But it just made me want to go back and watch Breaking Bad, and I loved that first time around, and I really want to see it again. But there's certain shows you watch and just go, God, I wish, you know, it's the time of life you watch it. Do you know, I thought about Stranger Things because, you know, but we're still getting more Stranger Things, so I think it has to be a show that's finished. Do you know what I mean? Something that's run for quite a long time. I think Red Dwarf, but maybe that's not dated all that well.
Oh, you know what I mean? I think it has, because Red Dwarf is something I still maintain. If Red my comedy. Mother knew how young I was when my dad got me watching too. It, yeah. She would batter him, because I did not understand what I was saying.
I did not understand the language. The original X-Files at some point, it probably hasn't dated well in terms of the way it looked.
The X-Files hasn't.
I'm too young.
I went back and watched the first season a couple of years ago, and it's aged horrendously.
No, maybe I'll never go back and watch it then, because I just don't remember.
I think it kind of... I was watching it and I was kind of thinking, this is a bit crappier than I remember, and I know that's not true. It's just when you compare it to modern TV, which is so polished and shiny, it looks like it was shot in the 70s.
I think True Detective Season 1 is another up there for me. I have only watched it once, though, in fairness.
I'm overdue a rewatch of that.
Yeah, so am I, actually. I really do want to watch that again. And it's only, what, 8 to 10 episodes? It's not crazy.
Yeah. You know, it's a weekend, isn't it? It's a good weekend's watching.
And there's various other things, but I think Breaking Bad for me, Game of Thrones for you, that kind of makes sense. There's a load of other good stuff you could say. I thought you might be Star Trekking, maybe, but it's, again, tricky because Star Trek's so big.
That's the thing. If I was ever to rewatch any Star Trek, it'd be Next Generation, because I grew up on Next Generation and then all the others.
And Deep Space Nine. And you are going to get a Picard show.
Which I can't wait for, because A, Patrick Stewart, and B, dogs. I love the fact they've now been building up saying every captain needs a number one, and his number one is a pit bull. I just love it. They're marketing it directly at me, and it's amazing. Because Patrick Stewart is just the biggest dog nonce you could imagine, and I love him for it, and he rescues dogs, and I think it might even be his dog that's in the show.
Oh, that's amazing if it is.
I think that'd it be... might be or something. Yeah, anyway, from Star Trek
Star
to Star Wars, which was almost scripted, but it really wasn't. I'm just conscious that it's already been 25 minutes.
Yeah, this is quite rare for us because we've actually usually got our shit together at this point on the podcast.
In fairness, anyways, that's all the questions' fault, so it's Kev's fault. So thanks, Kev.
Yeah, and we have done kind of recommendations, or at least what we're watching. So it's kind of just all about Star Wars now. We both watched the Rise of the Skywalker. What's it called?
Rise of Skywalker. It doesn't roll off the tongue, does it? Because I keep thinking it's Rise of the Skywalker.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say then, because it doesn't roll off the tongue. But we watched the trailer. I got goosebumps. And I can't remember who put it out on Twitter. I think it was Robbie Collin of the Guardian Telegraph, wherever he writes for. It's a critic. But he said there's nothing like that music and nothing like Star Wars to take you back to that point in your life and just get you just incredibly excited about a cinema event or, you know.
The only thing that comes close to it for me is the Avengers theme. The do-do-do-do. That gets me just done.
Every time, you know. I would say to you, and we talked about this, the portal sequence in Endgame is probably that moment in cinema history for us where it's just like, oh my God, this is everything.
Oh yeah, that was like a proper hold me moment.
Yeah, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry or shout. Or, do you know what I mean? It was just that kind of moment, I'll be honest. Just because it's all built up to that. And the MCU's done incredibly well to get to this point where it's obviously grossed incredible amounts of money, but it's just got this huge global fan base and it's done what I think Disney wanted to do with Star Wars, which is just reinvent this, you know, obviously it's a new thing with Marvel, but for Star Wars, they took it over, they spent a lot of money acquiring it. And I think they wanted to get to the point where Star Wars was the pinnacle. And don't get me wrong, The Force Awakens made a shit ton of money. Obviously, the reaction to The Last Jedi was indifferent. Actually, it was quite nasty, the reaction, wasn't it, to be honest?
Yeah.
It was Star Wars kind of fan babies crying about them not delivering what they expected and all this kind of stuff. Whereas J.J. Abrams was always going to do that because he did so well with Star Trek in terms of, you know, reintroducing something beloved, keeping it quite similar to the original, let's put it that way. And I must admit, this trailer does feel very much like Return of the Jedi. I mean, in a good way. But it did feel to me like it's playing on the classic Star Wars tropes. And as much as I love that, I kind of am ready for new things. So I was always good with Rian Johnson trying to push the boundaries in a little bit of a different direction on The Last Jedi. And I think that gets particularly unfair criticism. But this trailer, when that music kicks in, there's nothing quite like that, I don't think.
No, I'm the same. The bit that gets me, it's hearing the Emperor's voice again.
Yeah.
Hearing Palpatine's voice is just...
It's hearing Mark Hamill, actually. The couple of things he says about the Jedi in there is just... And even C-3PO saying one last look at his friends.
Oh, like, God,
Jesus
yeah.
Christ, man.
And then
I mean?
You see him, like, and he's got the red eyes, and it looks like he's sacrificing himself, like he's interfaced with some system or something,
and
it's going to corrupt
him. And I mean, of all the people
him.
That can go, I'd certainly be C-3PO over R2. I'd never want to lose R2, but, you know, still, he's such an iconic kind of...
And you'd never expect it from C-3PO because he's been such a wuss the entire time.
Oh, God.
Whereas R2's always the one that runs headfirst into danger, beeping and squeaking, isn't it?
I love
it. I would genuinely full-on cry if R2 ever got destroyed.
Yes. And that's what Star Wars, I mean, that's the thing. Look, we love, like we said about the MCU, we love the characters in there, but you love a robot droid to the point that you would cry if
got
hurt. And I mean, how does it do that? We both are of a similar age, so we didn't grow up with Star Wars being the cinematic experience. Do you know what I mean? We were kind of a little bit too old for the second coming with the newer ones, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The prequels. Because they came out probably when we were kind of too cool for... Not that. Do you
not
know
cool.
I mean?
But definitely too old.
Too old for it. Do you
we
know
were
mean?
Probably about we were about 5 or 6 years too old for the prequels, and we were... I remember watching the first Star Trek films. I must have been in double digits before I watched Star Wars. But it's not the same as it watching it
you know, 10, 15, 20 years later.
We watched it, you know, multiple times on ITV, I think, is probably what we grew up on, because it was on ITV. They'd probably put them on back to back, like Sundays, and you'd watch them, and then you'd have them recorded on VHS, and you'd rewind it and fast forward through the adverts and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I must have watched them so many times, and then I think everyone owned at least VHS, and then they did a remastered version that everyone owned the DVDs of. Or, do you know what I mean? Everyone's owned various different Star Wars kind of throughout their lives.
Yeah.
So for me, I was just, it was just synonymous with my childhood. It's just, but we weren't, for us, it wasn't the great cinematic experience. Do you know what I mean? That was something else. So it's different for us and our generation. But equally, I don't think I've seen a film more than I've seen maybe even A New Hope, I think, or even A Return of the Jedi. I think I didn't appreciate Empire Strikes Back until I was a little bit older, because it's the best film by a significant margin. Do you know what I mean? But I just don't think I, you know, got the sequences with Yoda and all that. I kind of just was there for the space battles and all the craziness and all the aliens and stuff. And it's just like, there's nothing been, like, Star Wars is the most influential sci-fi and probably influential film franchise of all time. And it's just, I don't know, it's hard to put it into words, but we are going to try and attempt a top five of our kind of major moments, our favourite moments. But we will probably deviate a little bit because there's so much you can talk about with these things. Go on, hit me with your number five and we'll go from there.
Right, I've not got them in a strict order, but if it was to mentally sort of do one. No, actually, I think I have, actually. I'd say The Birth of Darth Vader from Revenge of the Sith.
Ooh, I don't have anything from the prequels. I'll put that.
I actually really like Revenge of the Sith. I do actually think it's a very good film that kind of gets a little bit maligned because it was one of the prequels, but
it's that, quite hammy,
that moment, not the whole the high ground thing. I mean, the bit at the end when you see the table come up, and the helmet come down and you hear him take that first breath, that gives me goosebumps because it's the birth of one of the probably the greatest villain that's ever existed.
I think the greatest villain, but also the most kind of iconic, you know, in terms of like iconic characters of all time. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can't say anyone other than Darth Vader is the most known. That just if you did that breath, you know, the deep breath in and out, everybody in the world, I think, would.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I don't think there's anyone else ever been like that. You know, it's the most iconic character of all time. So I can see why you would choose that. It's a pretty important moment, you know.
Yeah.
I've gone because this is the kind of scene that I don't know, just really ignited my love for. What am I watching? What is this? And this is new and this is crazy, which is the cantina scene. and I know it's because, so you get chucked in. So at the beginning, obviously, a very bleak looking, you know, landscape. I think they shot it all in Tunisia or somewhere. So it's all
there. Yeah, it was.
And you don't, there's not much there. You know, you see Luke's kind of quaint existence and, you know, he's a guy that's not travelled. And this is like him getting his passport for the first time, do you know what I mean? And leaving the country. And it's amazing what you're thrust into, because it is just a small kind of outpost, isn't it? But it's full of, you know, nasty people and like, and the scourges and everyone that's just like, I don't know, it was just like badass. And I love that sequence. I love that they've riffed so much on the band. So they play their one song practically on a loop. And I love the Family Guy moment, you know, when they do, is it Blue Harvest?
Have you ever seen? Yeah. Oh, I love that. I've done a dark duty. My diaper has joined the dark side.
And they go, they're in the cantina and they're doing the song and he just goes, any requests? Yeah, play that one again. And he's just going, and it's just genius. I just love it. And obviously you've got, you know, Luke, Mark Hamill is very fresh face, very young. And he just plays that so well, where he just looks almost gormless. Do you know what I mean? He's just kind of, you know, awestruck all these people around him. He's sat at the bar, and this guy, you know, the guy with a like mangled face comes up to him and says, I don't like you. And then obviously Obi-Wan kind of steps in. And you've got that great then sequence with, you know, introducing Han and Chewie for the first time and kind of getting to grips with who the characters are. And then obviously Han versus Greedo in that kind of famous sequence. And it's quite bloody, you know, there's obviously a sequence at the bar and lightsaber comes out, he chops his arm off. Do you know what I mean? And then you get, you know, who shot first, and Han obviously shot Greedo in what people say is cold blood. But it's just, it's great, that sequence, that whole kind of 5 minutes. And it just introduced you to, I don't know, there's the mass, just, you know, all the puppetry and all the different characters and all the alien stuff. There'd never been anything like it. And I think as a kid, you just go, wow, what is this? Do you know what I mean? I think it's the thing that will catch kids' attention. If I watch that on my little boy, he'll probably be bored up until that point, and then he'll probably pay attention. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's just that moment. So yes, that's one of mine. I struggled to go off anything other than those three films, because they're my kind of films. But I will try and maybe throw something else in as into the mix.
Seeing as you mentioned it, I've just got to do this. Let me see, where is it?
Oh, yes.
I actually just woke Wilson up.
Can you please do that to the intro to the podcast? Just have that music. I'll die a happy man if that's the intro music.
Deal.
It's just brilliant. It's just so good.
Right. My number four. The assault on the Death Star from A New Hope.
Yes.
Because that whole sequence was just so grand.
The trench run.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's one of mine as well.
Even now when you go back and you look at it, and even after seeing, I mean, I can't count how many times I've seen that, but it's probably 20-something times, and it's still now, the bit when you see the ships going down in their groups of three, and everything starts shuddering, and it still gets me, and it doesn't look dated, even though the graphics are really crappy.
It doesn't look dated. None of those films look dated, because there's a lot of practical sets, do you know what I mean, at play. Obviously the space sequences and battles certainly aren't that, but the stuff on the Death Star and all that is great. It's always looked amazing. I love the trench run. The moment when Han drops in and saves him from Darth Vader, do you know what I mean? And it's just like, you know, kid, you're good to go and stuff. It's so good. It's the timing of it. And I love it. It's the first kind of space battle that we got and went, holy shit, this is amazing. And yeah. I still, to this day, you know, when he fires the two beams, you know, down that shaft, do they go from very wide into that perfect little circle?
The Force.
Keep watching him back. It's the Force, it's got to be.
If there's ever a question in Star Wars and you don't know what the answer is, the answer is the Force.
It's great. I mean, that whole first film, those sequences with Obi-Wan were just brilliant. I didn't choose it, but obviously the battle between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader in that film as well was very close to my top five. Just when Obi-Wan kind of sacrifices himself, and it's just because he knows what the, you know, it's Luke is there to become a Jedi. And like we said, he's so fresh-faced in that first film, isn't he? But he's become so important. It's such a great sequence.
So what was your number four then?
Well, it probably wasn't that, but that was on my that was probably top three. I'm going to throw in one from The Last Jedi. The much maligned Last Jedi, which is the chamber battle sequence.
Brilliant. Where,
you know, Rey and
Kylo
fight all those Imperial. Are they Imperials? I can't keep up with who's who.
Yeah. The red dudes. We'll
say they're Imperial. The red dudes in this incredible sequence. It's just incredible. And what Rian Johnson does, which I think maybe JJ might not be happy about, because he built Snoke up to being this big bad, is he suddenly killed him off. And it was just like, holy shit. Do you know what I mean? It did, that was a massive curveball for me. And it was those two fighting together. I think I was a bit unconvinced by Kylo in The Force Awakens.
Me too. He just came off like a bit of a wet blanket, didn't he?
Bit of a wet blanket. Feels like he needs his mummy a little bit. And I think he was just... We were so used to a villain with his helmet on. I know it sounds strange, but kind of the big reveal when he takes his helmet off. And you're like, is that it? Do you know what I mean? I just thought... I don't know. But Adam Driver's an incredible actor. And I think the second film, his relationship with Daisy, what's her face, is just... It's great. And, you know, they're interplay and all the stuff that goes on. Obviously, they've got this kind of crazy love-hate relationship. And it's just, I don't know, it's such an incredible kind of sequence that, and it's such a bloody kind of incredible battle. I just was blown away by it. That and the sequence at the end on the, you know, the white salt plains and all the kind of red dust coming off.
If I was to pick one from that film, it would have been the stuff from the salt plains, because the bit when you see the gliders come out and they're just touching the salt.
Oh, it's amazing.
It visually is incredible. And you've got those crystal foxes and then obviously all the footprint stuff with Luke and Kylo. It looks phenomenal because it's so white and then you just get the red bits everywhere.
I think the chamber sequence it's just for me, of these two of the newer films. I think
it's a very, very, very good fight scene. And when you see the behind-the-scenes stuff and how much stuff Daisy Ridley does of her own stunts, it takes it to another level because she was getting her ass handed to her time after time and getting battered with these prop swords and staffs.
Yeah, I think you really kind of felt her journey. I think there was a few issues with The Last Jedi, mainly around Finn, because he kind of felt a little bit like they didn't know what to do with him.
Well, people thought that he was supposed to be the secret Jedi, wasn't he? And a lot of people said that they felt like he was usurping a bit of Rey's like spotlight a little bit, or vice versa. She was taking
They played off each other really well in the first, in the first film, The Force Awakens. But in the second one, obviously, they separated them, and his story felt a bit pointless, and the whole casino sequence and riding on those things was a bit. I struggled with that in that film. Do you know what I mean? I just thought the whole casino scene was a bit pointless. Do you know what I mean? I didn't feel like their journey and their mission was very interesting. But Rey and Kylo, I could just watch all day, to be honest. I think they're the two that are kind of the key to all of this. I think judging on the trailer and what we've seen of Rise of the Skywalker, it's going to be very much around those two on whether they can... I don't know, whether she goes to the dark side, whether he comes back to the light. Do you know what I mean? We'll just see what happens. I hope he goes full dark, to be honest. I hope there isn't a redemption there.
That's exactly what I've been saying. Yeah. I want him to team up with Rey to take down Palpatine because he wants to be the only Sith in the galaxy and he's not prepared to share. And it looks like he's going to do a redemption arc, but then he turns his back and he tries to kill her or something. I would actually be happy if he does kill her. And in this one instance, evil wins. Because it's too obvious to say, oh, he's the Rise of Skywalker. And oh, even though he killed his dad, at the end of the day, he's a good lad. And it's too predictable and it's too cheesy. And I'll be disappointed if that's how Star Wars finishes.
And I think they've made him an interesting character because he doesn't do the... He doesn't do the obvious things. He kills his dad for a start.
Well, it would also cheapen the whole killing of Han Solo if all of a sudden at the end of the day he goes, oh, you know what? I'm not conflicted. I am good. It would be a bit of a crappy service to have killed off Han to make that kind of moot like an hour and a half later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm same as you. I want dark Kylo till the very end.
Yeah. Me too.
My number three, Empire Strikes Back, the scene with the AT-ATs.
The Battle of Hoth, which again is in mine.
It's impossible not to, because that even now, that is, of all the toys I had in my childhood, the one thing I never got into buying Star Wars toys, because I was Transformers and Thundercats, but my friend Mark, he had loads of them, and whenever we went round to his... All I ever wanted to play with was his Millennium Falcon and his AT-AT, because those AT-ATs things were cool as shit.
They are the coolest thing. I think they are the...
If I'm ever rich enough, I'm building an AT-AT. I'm surprised that like Elon Musk hasn't built one, because I mean, he's basically a crazy scientist anyway, and he's worth about a $1 quadrillion. So we could build an AT-AT.
The Disney Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
You know, Disneyland Star Wars, whatever it's called.
Galaxy's Edge.
Galaxy's Edge, so you can ride the Falcon, which is cool. So it's like you can either be a gunner or you can be a pilot or you can do the warp speed thing, which would be, you know, wicked. But their big attraction, which is about to open, is Rise of the Resistance, and it's like a 3D ride and moving carts and all this kind of stuff. Looks amazing. The big sequence in that and the whole building, you've got two full sized AT-ATs in
there. Oh, sure.
And I'm just like, and then you've got like, you know, animatronic robots and obviously stormtroopers and all this kind of shit, but imagine that, like full size AT-ATs. It's like, that's going to be amazing.
I'm actually a bit damp.
It's one of those things. AT-ATs were, that battle sequence is amazing. And when they realize they can't really defeat them using their pretty shitty weapons, you know what I mean? Because the resistance is weak. Do you know what I mean? Let's be honest, they're overpowered, they're outnumbered. Throughout the whole of Star Wars, and they're really always on the back foot. Even after defeating the Death Star in the first film, the as soon as we get into Empire Strikes Back, they're weak again in comparison to the, you know, and they're just on the back foot. And they realise they can't really get them with their cannons, their blasters, so they use these winch ropes and bloody do the classic round the legs and trip them up kind of thing. And then there's a great sequence where I think Luke, ship gets kind of partially destroyed, and then he uses a winch to kind of plant a grenade in the AT-AT and blows up. It's just amazing. I mean, that whole sequence on Hoth, and obviously, you know, Luke cutting open the I can't remember what they bloody are, but you know, those
Tonton.
Kind of llama, yeah, and like having to get inside it to keep warm and all that kind of stuff. It's just disgusting. But all that, you just felt it.
The stuff on Hoth is a proper iconic scene. Like, people see that and people know it's Star Wars.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things.
And it was such a different thing from going from space to that. Do you know what I mean? That was such a bold thing to do.
Yeah, it kind of grounded it a bit more.
Well, because you're so used to the desert stuff, and then the whole of the last, you know, the first film, it became all the space battle and the Death Star and all that kind of thing, blowing up planets and whatnot. And then you come to the second film, you're like, Christ, it's just thrown you into snow. And then you know, in the third film, you go into jungle. And I think we've seen all those different things already in the trailer for, you know, Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, they do seem to, especially the jungle planet, which
it's a funny thing where
isn't Endor, but
you know, Star Wars doesn't do it. Does planets which are all jungle or all ice or all this? It's like they can't have more than one ecosystem. It's just one thing. Do you know what I mean? So that's just the way Star Wars kind of rolls. But yeah, it's great. And I for me, that's, you know, there's some great battles throughout Star Wars, but I think that's the one. And any time on Hoth, I think it's just such a great sequence.
Yeah. So what did you have down as your number three?
It was that.
Ah, was okay. That. Good, yeah, good. Yeah. Right, tell you what, you do your number two then, seeing as I just stole that one.
So, oh God, do I even have five? I'm reading four and I can't even think I've got a five. Maybe mine was the Chamber Battle and maybe my number two was the Battle of Hoth, I think it was. So, yeah, I think I've had. Yeah, I have. So you're number two.
Right. Vader's appearance at the end of Rogue One.
See, I knew you'd have this, so I didn't include it. And also, it's the biggest fan service thing of all time, I think is fair to say. But there's nothing wrong with that, because it is badass and quite incredible.
It's the bit when you know what it's building to, because when I first saw it, you recognise the layout of the ship and you think, yeah, okay. It's when you see down the dark corridor and all of a sudden you just see the red light from his lightsaber, and then you just hear the and you just know that shit's going to go down, and then he's just slashing and deflecting and force choking and throwing people all over the place. And it's frantic, and you're sort of willing that one guy who's got the drive with the coordinates, and you're like, go, you need to run. And then as they get there and they launch the shuttle, and all of a sudden everything goes bright white, and instantly I was like, it's A New Hope. It's right at the beginning, and it's about as seamless as you can get And then, of course, you've got the brilliant CGI de-aging of Carrie Fisher when she's, what is it? And she just says, hope. I mean, you're right. It's total fan service, but
yeah, I know.
As a fan, I was well and truly serviced.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, we will talk about Carrie Fisher a little bit. I think we'll probably talk about it when we do our review, maybe, because I think she, you know, when we review the film and probably in the new year, because she's as important as anyone in this to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the characters, she's as important as anyone. And I mean, forgive me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. It's still the line for me in any of the films. It's just amazing. And it, obviously, it's played out among everything we've had, but it's just so iconic. And she was just, I mean, she's such a badass. I've said that word a lot, but she is an incredible human being. Do you know what I mean? She was so against being a princess, but she wasn't stereotypical. Do you know what I mean? She kind of rewrote what a princess is, because in that era, it wasn't someone, you know, bar maybe Ripley and Alien, it wasn't someone who was able to fight and to command and to lead and, you know, everything that she's done. And I think she, as a character, she's just probably up there with any of the best in the Star Wars kind of, and any of the characters in movie history, really. She's just amazing. And I think it was great that she got some time. Again, you know, we saw her and Mark Hamill in the last film, and she had some great moments with Han. And I mean, that original trio along with Chewie is just, you know, I don't know, you can't write better characters than those. You know, we said about, imagine how upset we are if R2 died, but you know, we don't understand the word Chewie's saying, but we feel everything.
Yeah,
portrays. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, we know everything, and it's just amazing.
Again, how does a film franchise manage to make you care so much about a giant space bear that you can't understand a word he says, but you love him?
Exactly. I did have another one, right, but I think this will be six, but I'm going to throw it in anyway. So, because we're kind of talking about the carbonite scene where Han gets obviously frozen in carbonite in Empire Strikes Back when Lando betrays him, and you've just got Darth Vader sat at the dinner table. It's just amazing, that sequence when they wander in and Darth is just there at the head of the table and it's like, oh shit, it's about to go down. Do you know what I mean? And it's amazing, Chewbacca's reaction. You just feel every emotion of that sequence. Obviously, I think leading into, say, you know, Return of the Jedi, it's kind of much maligned because obviously Luke's a different kind of character then. He's all dark hooded and cloaked, and you know, you get Leia strangling Jabba and all the kind of stuff that goes on. But I love all the build up to it. I think the sequences with Han where he's finally getting his comeuppance, because he's a cheeky bastard.
He's a horrendous asshole.
So many people out of everything. Do you know what I mean? And it's just brilliant. I mean, obviously, you know, we can talk about iconic characters, and Harrison Ford has played some of the best.
Well, that was Harrison Ford in his absolute pomp, wasn't it?
Yeah, that and Indiana Jones. You just can't really get better than that.
No.
Do you know what I mean? He's just like, he's the most charismatic.
That was him when he could have made you think that painting your walls white when they were already white was a great idea. He could have made you do anything.
Oozed charisma, didn't he?
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
We talked about Downey Jr. and people of this modern era, but there's no one quite like that. Do you know what I mean? And he's still kicking it at 80 almost. He's just insane, isn't he? He's just that kind of guy, still crashing planes and doing this, that, and the other. He's a rogue, you know, and he just always has been. But yeah, it was a great relationship, him and Lando. I think we talk about Solo quite a lot, and I think I can't remember his name, but the guy who kind of tried to play him did it in a kind of interesting way, to be honest. I think he didn't quite capture everything, but Alden, what's his name, Alden Ehrenreich, we like that film, but you know, Donald Glover as Lando kind of really worked, and it was quite interesting to get that backstory and talk about the, you know, there's always this stuff about traveling the 12 parsecs and all that. Do you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. There's always the legend that goes along with Han Solo.
Yeah.
So it was good to get a bit of that. And obviously we've got Lando in this, you know, in the new film, which it's going to be great to see him back, because again, there's been so many great characters in Star Wars history, so many great lines, so many great moments, but it shares these moments around. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't just, I don't know, it feels like the kind of, you know, kind of thing where you've got all these great characters, and then you can bring people like Billy Dee Williams back, or you can bring Mark Hamill back for even a small moment, or you can bring all the iconic characters back. They just, you just remember so much of what they've done. It's just, yeah, nothing quite like Star Wars, really, I'll be honest.
Yeah, true. So what have you
not
got as your
perfect.
What have you got as your number one?
I Am Your Father.
Yeah, snap. Crucially, yeah. just to dispel the myth, it's no, I am your father. He never says, Luke, I am your father. So anyone that says that, that's a paddling. You better believe that's a paddling.
I mean, it is the moment. Do you know what I mean?
It's impossible to look past it. You can imagine watching that for the first time in, what, 81, was it?
Yes.
Something like that. You can imagine sitting there and the collective sharp intake of
1980.
When that came out must have been incredible. And again, it's one of those scenes.
We've had twists in cinema. We've had Fight Club. We've had the Sixth Sense. We've had, you know, big moments, you know, Shawshank Redemption, where he escapes prison, all these kind of huge iconic moments, but nothing like that. There's nothing been like that before, I don't think.
Again, it's another one of those things. People who aren't really Star Wars fans would know how to do that scene properly, having maybe only seen it in passing. It's just one of those things that sticks in your brain.
Well, it sticks in your brain, and it's a meme, and it's a gif, and it's everything. Do you know what I mean? It's the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's the moment that just defined the whole thing, because it just showed how interconnected the whole universe was. That yes, you can be the ultimate evil in the universe, but you were once the ultimate good in the universe, and now your kid's gonna have to.
And I think as well, it was always talk about he killed his father. Do you know what I mean? He killed Anakin Skywalker, and
because he gets it, doesn't he? He gets it from Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan says that Vader killed him, and he's right in a way, but obviously he means in a literal sense he thinks he killed him, whereas he just means personality wise. And again, that's why when you see that moment, that's why that scene from Revenge of the Sith is so powerful to me, because that's the moment when Anakin Skywalker died. As soon as that thing comes up and the helmet goes down, that's the death of Anakin and the birth of Vader. And that's just a brilliant moment.
Surprised none of us, neither of us, a Jar Jar Binks memory on the top five.
You see, there's so many memorable Jar Jar moments that to pick one would just be unfair.
I mean, there was a lot of great battle sequences. I did almost opt for Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan versus Darth Maul.
I nearly went for that simply because I love Qui-Gon. He's one of my favourite Star Wars characters. Because I love Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson's great. And I think Ewan McGregor did a really good job of Obi-Wan, actually.
And I can't wait for him to be coming back.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking happy. And the best thing is, he's happy as well. He's been on about this for like 10 years, always saying,
I would love to. He's always been one of the things out of the prequels that has been quite popular. Do you know what I mean?
He was probably the single best thing out of the prequels, because he was just brilliant. As bad as Hayden Christensen was, he was 10 times better.
I think that the middle film with the relationship between is probably the most awful thing of the whole series, to be honest.
I'm not even going to argue, because honestly, I've had more charisma and more charm out of A Cup of Warm Piss than I have out of Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman pretending to be in love.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Yeah. It was
I was going to mention it, because she's on the list.
I know. She's
for anyone that doesn't know, for some reason, I've got a list of like actors and actresses that I really, really hate. And Natalie Portman's probably second after Claire Danes.
Against Claire Danes?
She ruined Homeland for me, because every scene was like, I'm crying, I'm crying. It's like, shut up and show someone blowing something up.
Yeah, it's that kind of
I'm not a very deep person, am I? I just want to see shit get blown up.
Yeah, simple man. In life,
simple man, simple mind.
Simple pleasures. We've got a lot of other... quite a lot of people replied on social media when we put this out. It's a difficult thing to say a top five, do you know what I mean? Because it's like, like we said, we could talk all day. There's some great other battle sequences, obviously, some of the space battle sequences. Yoda, when he has that crazy lightsaber battle, people always love that. I don't know.
Really good one from Wasim, who always interacts with us. His number four, Luke's cry of no when Obi-Wan gets stuck down by Vader. That's a really, really powerful moment.
Yes, it is.
What else have we got? Chris Han saying, I know, when Leia says, I love you.
Oh, it's great.
It's just pure Harrison.
Right. I had a few kind of like favorite quotes. And It's a Trap is obviously there.
It's a Trap.
And I love you, I know, is on that list as well, because it's just great. I love that whole sequence with those three when they're on the, is it on the Death Star or on the Star Destroyer or whatever they're on, and they're in that compacting rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that monster in there and all those kind of, it's great around there. You know, that early kind of, it's quite whimsical.
R2 swimming around.
Yeah, exactly. It's just great, man.
Any scene with R2 in is just made.
Yeah. And same with BB-8. When R2's on the ship, do you know what I mean? When he's kind of dead center on the command and you've got, you know, BB-8's obviously taken the mantle. BB-8's been great. I think there's some great, like, Ewoks get a bad press, but I still love all that kind of
stuff. I love the Ewoks. I will not hear a bad word said about Ewoks.
And I love the forest sequence when you've got those, you know, those speed bikes and stuff. And it's just great.
They get taken down by little space bears with rocks and big, massive ropes. It's brilliant. It's just awesome. The David and Goliath thing just set in the future. It's like, you can have all the speeders and blasters that you want, but I've got a big vine pulled across two trees, like Wile E. Coyote.
Love or hate the Ewoks, love or hate them, they're still charismatic little things. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've still got a great personality.
And again, they're iconic. If you show someone a picture of Ewoks, most people, even if they don't know the name, they'll know that, oh, they're the little bear things from Star Wars.
I mean, Warwick Davis is still living a career off being an Ewok, do you know what I mean?
Well, and off being in Willow, it's those two things.
Yeah, Willow, and then he was in Harry Potter and stuff. He's obviously coined a good career.
And now he presents Tenable, lighting up everyone's afternoons.
There you go.
What else did Chris say? Vader killing Palpatine, or so we thought, ...
Well, exactly. But that, I mean, that is a big moment. Obviously, you know, he's kind of finally rebelling, finally kind of coming good. And when he removes his helmet.
I was just going to say, off the back of that, when you actually see his face and he's all, he looks like an egg, doesn't he, with a face crudely drawn on and with all the force lightning when he's just basically frying.
I think we mentioned
Luke.
The breathing, but the voice is just so incredible, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible to imagine anything other than James Earl Jones.
Yeah,
over
who
that.
Also did Mufasa as well, and did Mufasa in the recent film. So,
I don't know this guy's name. He's only a new follower, Jay Gray, so I'm going to assume his name is John or James. Luke with the binary suns at the end of The Last Jedi, that's a brilliant scene. When he dies,
I mean,
and he becomes
really
one with the Force. That scene's beautiful. Obi-Wan versus Vader.
Yeah.
Han helping the rebels and Jin securing the Death Star plans. Yeah, Jin Erso. There was another mention of Jin's sacrifice at the end of Rogue One.
Rogue One. I've been a bit controversial about my take on Rogue One. I've warmed to it a lot. I think for a while I just didn't see the. I wanted new Star Wars material, maybe not things that we kind of. I didn't need it all spelling out to me, but there were some great moments in that battle sequence where they're in like. The Maldives or whatever, you know, towards the end in that chocolate battle sequence before the Vader. I think the third act in that film really makes up for the rest. I think you can forgive it, but I think there was a bit more work to do on the characters. But Jin was quite a likable character. They did some good work generally for her. There's just a few others in there that I just didn't quite think they did enough with, but so be it.
We are on this topic, we did actually do a poll where I asked. Now we've had the final trailer for The Rise of Skywalker, it raises one big question. Do you want her to be a random nobody, as has been set out before, or would you prefer her to be in some way related to Palpatine or the Skywalkers or some other Jedi? And strangely, 62% of people said a somebody, and I'm surprised by that. Which would you rather have?
I kind of want her to be... I don't know, actually. I really don't know. it's hard because it's been so like muddied the waters a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Because you just don't know what they're aiming for. I think it'd be nice for it to be a Jedi that isn't a Skywalker, actually, I'd say. And that, you know, I think what the last film tried to get across was that there can be more than... It doesn't have to just be about Skywalkers. Do you know what I mean? I think it can be about more than that. And I don't know. It's difficult. What do you think?
I've since it was mentioned, I want her to be a nobody. It would be. Yeah. I will be really annoyed if they come out and she's a clone of Palpatine, or she's like a granddaughter, or she's in any way related, because they put so much stock. And this is obviously the problem with having different directors, because you've got different people's sort of paths have crossed on this. Yeah. I like the fact that you had the bit with Kylo, didn't you, where, and he says your parents were nobody. You know, that there's no great mystery. Your parents were just nobody. They just left you on that planet. There is no great conspiracy. You are just nothing. And I like that, because it's like, yes, you could be a part of royalty. You could be a long lost Skywalker and you could be a Jedi Knight, but you could also just be some random kid who gets dumped on a trash planet, and you could be a Jedi as well. And I think that would be the more poetic way of doing it. Plus, we've got a descendant in Kylo Ren. Do we need them to both be like famous Jedi Sith kids?
Yeah,
because then it's like you're just using the same plot for both of the main characters.
I like the concept that she comes from nothing. I think Maisie motivates her more. I think if they just did the whole... I think what I want from this last film is that it's not just the same played out story. I mean, it, like I said, it has certain connotations, you know, certain things that feel very much like parallels with Return of the Jedi, and I kind of want that, but I also want something a bit different. So like we said with Kylo, it's just going to be interesting which way they play it out, but I don't want it to be predictable. I kind of want a couple of twists in there, and I'm also interested, you know, how they are going to do the Emperor, whether he is going to be a bit like Vader, where he's robotic in part, or do you know what I mean? I don't know what they're going to do in terms of trying to bring him back and make it, whether it's even him. Do you know what I mean? I'm just not sure yet. So it's going to be interesting. I would say there's been a couple of... Someone did put a shout out about Jabba getting killed by Leia. I thought that was great. I like the Rancor battle in...
Yeah, the Rancor battle.
When he gets thrown into the pit, it's great with that Rancor battle, and he squashes him under the electronic gate. I just thought that was...
Oh, and the poor jailer comes down and he's gutted because his little pet has been squished.
His little pet Rancor that's been, you know, killing people and eating them. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
There's so many.
Yeah.
I came upon
mine. Have we got any from The Force Awakens? Because I feel like we've just kind of dismissed it. There's not really been any chat about it.
I really love The Force Awakens, but when I think iconic films,
It's not there, is it?
No. I think it's a great overall film, but yeah. I couldn't tell you any of the things which would even make my top 20.
The one thing I did like with it, I did like when Rey was flying the Falcon through that, I can't remember what the planet she's on, the desert planet. Yeah, and she's flying it through the cave system and stuff, and that was quite a cool sequence. There are iconic moments in there, obviously, when Finn takes his helmet off as a stormtrooper, we've never had anything like that before, have we? Do you know what I mean? So that was quite a cool moment.
Do you know it was really seen just totally off topic, you know, to be... Go on. Strange. I can't remember being as disappointed with many characters as I was with Captain Phasma. They made such a big deal out of the fact they cast Gwendolyn Christie, and they put her in this... She's six foot three.
Yeah,
she's wearing chrome armor with a red cape. And then she's in it for about 8 seconds, and she's crap. All she does is tell him to go and get his mind reprogrammed. And
yeah,
she's really... And then she's a little bit more in the second one, but... She was such a waste.
She was, because it's supposed to be pitted her off against Finn and obviously Rey against Kylo. It was just not there. I think that there was a good battle sequence, obviously, at the end of The Force Awakens with Kylo versus Rey when she's first kind of learning to use a lightsaber. I thought that was really good. And the ground kind of it's like an earthquake, isn't it?
So yeah,
it separates and they're kind of forced away from each other. That's pretty awesome. And I did like the sequence when they're on the kind of forest planet, and the stormtroopers got that kind of lightsaber equivalent kind of gun. Do you know what I mean? And he's fighting. I can't remember what it was, but you know, when Finn's fighting him, and then you've
yeah,
got,
it's weird because that was one of the big parts of the trailers, wasn't it? It's like a sort of staff meets a sword, and
yeah,
because they were like shock troopers, weren't they?
And you've got, you know, Han stealing Chewie's kind of
oh yeah, and he's like, oh, now I can see why you like this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And he keeps using it, and Chewie's like, no, you twat, give me my thing back.
I would say when Han and Chewie go on the Millennium Falcon again and say we're home.
Oh yeah,
I think that's
all the feels.
Really, yeah. I think obviously it's again fan service, but it does have that kind of. It's quite memorable and iconic, you know. So
and it is. It's them home, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it.
I loved all the stuff with Luke. I mean, Mark Hamill's just incredible. But I loved all the stuff with Luke when he's drinking the bizarre blue milk and he's got those little...
Oh, the big alien titty milk.
But he's just such a bastard. I love it about him. He's just gone full grumpy old man, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? He's been isolated on...
I mean, obviously, me as a grumpy old man, I can relate to that.
Yeah, I think he's great in that film. I think he's amazing. More Mark Hamill, the better, really. There's been a couple of things before we wrap that maybe he's still alive and maybe we will see him in this film. I think we'll see him certainly as a
Force ghost.
If we don't see him otherwise.
I don't want him to be back. It ruins the
sacrifice. There's talk of Hayden Christensen being a Force ghost, which I think would be quite cool as well, in fairness. But I do you not want him back? I just wonder whether... You know, you have Palpatine, and obviously it's not going to be Leia that is there to help, but you just wonder if Luke Skywalker just rocks up at that moment. I don't know. I know it's supposed to be about Rey.
I don't want him to
do it on her own.
Again, I think it would cheapen the impact of the whole point.
Possibly.
Was he died because he was projecting his consciousness.
Yeah, possibly.
Right the way across the universe, and that completely sapped his power.
And that moment was great when they're firing everything they've got at him and then just realise he's not even
it's
there.
It's that moment when the intergalactic penny drops and he looks at the salt and he realises that he's not made a single footprint, and it's he's pulled the wool over his eyes from about 10 million miles away. And
I can't remember the character that Donald Gleason plays, you know, Brendan Gleason's kid, who's is the kind of new de facto leader, obviously, along with Kylo. But he's quite brilliantly over the top, actually. I think he kind of makes it work. I mean, he's having a hell of a career, like his dad did, to be honest, because he's great in Ex Machina and Ex Machina, and he's gone on to have some really interesting things. But it's good, that film. It's got some really good moments. I think it's quite harshly done too, but I like The Last Jedi quite a lot. He's generally
Dom Hall.
Yeah.
Dom Gleeson.
Dommel Gleeson.
Dommel. So what? Let's just call
Irish.
Him Dom.
It's Irish anyway.
Oh, but if it's Irish, it's probably Dave or something.
Dave Gleeson.
Yeah, Gleeson.
But his dad's obviously Brendan Gleeson, who is actually one of my favourite actors. But yeah, he plays General Hux. And then you've got the guy. Rian Johnson's a fan of who's your famous British guy who's in Bottom?
Edmondson.
Adrian Edmondson, and pops up as Captain Peavy in that, and he's brilliant as well, to be honest. And it's because he was a big fan of Bottom and the Young Ones, apparently, Johnson, and he cast him in that, and he's really good. He's really effective.
Well, he's really sort of stiff shirt collar, isn't he? And he looks every bit the Imperial officer.
Yeah,
you wouldn't think that he spent his formative years as a punk or kicking people in the bollocks.
No, exactly. I would quickly say I think Laura Dern as Vice Admiral Holdo was great in that film as well. I think she's gets a bit of a bad rep, but
yeah.
And Oscar Isaac as well, man. I mean, Poe Dameron is obviously the new Han Solo.
I love Oscar Isaac.
He's such a cool guy, man. He's.
I actually think. I don't know whether this is an age thing, but I relate to him more now than I did to Harrison Ford when I started watching.
I think that is an age thing. Yeah,
I mean, you're right. He's completely the Han Solo because he's the bastard, oh, yeah. isn't he? He's the one that he does the right thing, but for the wrong reason.
He's the redeemable bastard. He's the rogue. He's the one that
he's
makes
the rogue.
Decisions.
Yeah,
you know, he's just playing that part.
He's the scruffy nerf herder.
But I mean, as an actor, man, that guy's career is just amazing.
Like, he's had a pretty good few years.
He's funny because he could be doing the Kylo Ren part. I genuinely, he's that guy, because if you've seen Ex Machina, he can play villainous. Do you know what I mean? And he can play like scary, on the edge kind of guy.
Well, of course, he's scary as Gomez Adams in the new Adams Family film.
You won't have seen Inside Llewyn Davis, but he's no. just.
I didn't realize kind of he film. Was actually the voice of. Spider-Man 2099 and Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I spotted that before. He's in Annihilation. Did you ever get around to watching Annihilation?
No. Oh, I will, because I really do want to watch it, but at the minute the Netflix account that I use has been temporarily disabled.
That's bad.
It's because I'm using a work account and the payment's been messed around through corporate credit cards.
£8 a month is too rich, is it?
Yeah.
Right, what I'd say is, I think we're done. I mean, we could talk about Star Wars.
I could talk about Star Wars for a week.
Yeah, and all this is doing is it's
making me want to go back and watch everything in canon order, including Rogue
One.
It's
one of those. Recently, I watched The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, but I would like to go back and watch the prequels. But I think I'm probably just going to go and watch the original.
I'm going to watch all of them because we've got tickets booked, haven't we, for Rise of Skywalker.
20th of December, IMAX. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Before that, I am watching everything in sort of time, not release order, in timeline order. Because the good thing is,
we've missed, get the prequels out the way. It's the Clone Wars. Now, a lot of people have got a lot of great things to say about the Clone Wars.
I gave up on it because I was struggling to find good streams of it. But
yeah, and that's fair enough.
Very good.
I think it will all be on Disney Plus when it drops, and I think I will be getting a Disney Plus account. So I think I will look to that then.
The best thing that came out of it was the relationship between Obi-Wan, yeah. Anakin, and Ahsoka Tano. She was brilliant, and she's the one that a load of people want her to be. The one that's brought into the mainstream canon that sort of jumps across, and then they brought back Darth Maul, and there was some fascinating episodes. I was talking to a cousy about it months ago. It was before Lucy was born, and I think I stopped about halfway through season 3.
Yeah,
and he said that after that it knuckles down, and the latter couple of seasons are supposed to be incredible. And I want to go back, and that's what
I
was thinking.
I would like to watch, but obviously a lot of people have got a lot of praise for something like that. And there's moments from there that I think are quite iconic. But I think the original trilogy is always where my heart is going to be
always.
In terms of moments. I think
Empire Strikes Back belongs on every top list.
Empire is one of my favourite films. And it's just, there's so many great moments. And I think as a kid, I didn't quite appreciate Yoda. And those sequences with Luke, but going back and watching that again, they're just great. Do you know what I mean? All those words of wisdom, all that stuff on that planet, and every sequence in that film, you just feel it. Do you know what I mean? It's just such a great film.
The only way I could love Yoda more is if he was a robot. That's
it. He's just such a great character, and he's a puppet, and you believe it. Do you know what I mean? It's just crazy. Right, that's us. We're going to be back in a couple of weeks. If Stu gets around to watching Zombieland Double Tap, hopefully we will review that. If not, we will review it at some stage, but it might be down the line. We are going to continue to watching things like Watchmen. I'm hoping there's another season of Umbrella Academy coming, because there's a big rumour that it's going to drop at some point. Hopefully Netflix do something quite cool with that. But we've got a lot of good stuff to come. So keep listening, keep reviewing, keep kind of sharing us. We do genuinely appreciate it. And we'll be back with you very soon.